All right, Sam McKeown of the Omaha World Herald joins us here on Mornings with Sharp and Hanley on 1620 The Zone. Good Tuesday morning, Sam.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
It's the end of April. Now we have 4 months to either temper our enthusiasm or just lean into what we saw out of 15 on Saturday. But take out the quarterback position. What area do you think Nebraska is better from the last time you saw him in that stadium on Black Friday, a loss to Iowa, to you and I are standing next to each other on the field on Saturday?
Receiver, I think. That's the position that I would pick where I think they've gotten clearly better. And that's just not only the maturity of the players that were already in the program, but the addition of Jamal Banks and Isaiah Nayor, interesting players, size. A little bit different than a Billy Kemp, for example. And I think those additions, plus the development of Jalen Lloyd, the addition of Ja'Cory Barney, a few other players. Too bad that Demetrius Bell got hurt, because, you know, obviously you can tell he can do some things with the football. But I think that position looks better to me above all the other positions on the team.
And now I want to reinsert the quarterback conversation here for a moment, because all week long, And Gary was challenging people to go ahead and get excited, go all in about Dylan Raiola. Then you see him on Saturday, and a lot of people get, for the first time in their very own eyes, get a chance to watch him. Based on what you saw, what you know wasn't out there, what you know he was up against, and what the overall plan was, what do you take away from your moments of seeing Dylan Raiola and that spring game that you can still say, yeah, see that part? That's okay to get all in on, despite what type of competition you're going up against.
Well, there are three times, I think, during the spring game where, you know, he's making a throw, and I just kind of say to myself under my breath, that's a good throw. Mm-hmm. And you like seeing that. I think, there's things that he does that look pretty effortless. Arm strength gets you some things. You know, I think he's able to make a surprise throw. Makes him maybe slightly harder to read for a defense to read him, because I think he can kind of do some things with his arm that isn't necessarily going to have a defense thinking. The one throw to Alex Bullock, you know, I think Dylan probably wanted to throw that ball before a defender started to kind of turn his head and look toward the crosser underneath, but I thought Raiola did a nice job of getting that ball in there so quick that there's just not a lot that the underneath defender could do, sort of the guy that was in zone coverage there. And so, you know, I think there's some things that he can do that are really good. Thought he got the ball out. The short throws were pretty accurate. They weren't rushed. I think he's probably worked a lot on that kind of stuff. And so he just brings a high skill set. And by skill set, I don't mean athleticism, although I could mean that. I mean, he just knows how to throw a ball. Like he is skilled with, I'm guessing that if you told him, hey man, go out and throw a volleyball, a rugby ball, a basketball, like he could do all those things. Mm-hmm. Like he just has hand-eye coordination. And so when you have those things and then you put a strong arm into that component, good things happen. Like he has that skill set. I think Heinrich Harburg is a great athlete. You know, like he's probably a better athlete than Raiola in terms of like the ability to run and jump and all the things that you would describe and sprint. But, you know, Raiola has tools that make him specifically good to be a quarterback. Same kind of tools that make you a good golfer. I'm guessing Dylan Raiola is probably going to be a good golfer one day because he has natural hand-eye coordination.
What do you do at defensive back? So Bly Hill had a good spring. Worked his way into possibly starting an opening day, and now he's down. We don't know the full extent, but as you look throughout the defensive backs, whether they be safeties or cornerbacks or nickels or whatever, and Isaac Gifford didn't play, and he could lead Nebraska in tackles again, and we don't know about the status of Singleton. What's your comfort level on Nebraska on the back end with all of these bodies, but maybe not a lot of guys that you could trust fully on April 30th?
Yeah, I think it's iffy. I think that's probably an area where if they see the right corner go into the portal here in the next couple of days or is already in the portal, maybe you kick tires on that. I think you do have a lot of safety players. So you have Buford and you have Singleton, provided he's healthy, and you have Gifford and you have Kobe Brett, who I think they think is a pretty good player. They have a few other guys back there as well. I think at corner, you know, they probably don't have as many players that they feel great about. I think that's probably a work in progress. I know they feel good about Jeremiah Charles if he's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
DeAndre Barnes was active on Saturday. If nothing else, I think he was active and he was around the ball. I think there's precision points that'll come into play when you're playing USC that you have to make sure that you're dialed into. You know, Evan Cooper's got a lot of options back there. It's a question of picking the options and then having them ready to go, especially by game two. Now, we can say whatever we want to say about the off-season mess that Colorado tends to create it for itself, but when they get in a game, they got a great quarterback, and he is, you know, as annoying he might be to people, Shedeur Sanders is going to play in the NFL and probably for a long time, and he's got good receivers. And so that doesn't change. Colorado can win almost every game it plays because it has those components. And Nebraska has to be able to defend those guys. The culture stuff is what it is, but Nebraska has to defend Shedeur Sanders and his receivers. And they did that for like 83% of the plays in Boulder, and then the other 17% they didn't, and they got beat. So you got to be on point with your defensive backfield, and I think that'll be something that obviously everybody's locked into in the offseason.
I think we were all looking at running backs. It was good to see Dante Dowdell have that run, but when you look at that position from the guys that were active and the guys that you assume would factor in between Emma Johnson, Dante Dowdell, and even Quentin Ives, what was your spring takeaway from that position culminating with last Saturday?
Well, they played with an edge, which I appreciated. I thought Emmett Johnson had a great early run. It was only 4 yards, but it was just the kind of tone you want to set. Nice run there. I thought Dowdell, down by the goal line, didn't try to get cute. Both times he lowered his shoulder, the second time he's in the end zone. That's all you're trying to do down there, and he did dance, which I appreciated. He got out on one and was able to go around the defense. Mazuka had, a nice bend-back run for 15 that saw the hole and was able to get through it. So, I think they did some good things. The run game wasn't terribly diverse. But the more diverse your run game becomes, the more skilled your running back has to be at understanding how to run all those plays.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a learned skill. You can have vision for sure. And there's natural qualities. Of course, I guess if you're Barry Sanders, you can do whatever you want. But, like, to run a toss play is to run a toss play. You have to know how to run it. You can't just, run it however the hell you want. So I think they did a nice job of running that inside zone play and just jamming it up in there. A couple of good pass protections. I thought they played fine. Obviously, they were kicking the tires on Dylan Edwards because there's still a question of explosive play.
Yeah.
And, like, when you want to throw the ball to the back, can he make two guys miss and turn a 7-yard play into a 60-yard play? And I don't know. Ramir Johnson might be the one guy who can do that, but he's been banged up.
Yeah, I we are on the same page about the running back room. Sam McCune of the World Herald joining us. So an area that was on display that we all went, oh, boy. I know the return game wasn't set up like it's, you're going to see on a normal Saturday. But we got to see the returning place kicker, the returning punter. I don't know that they exuded a lot of confidence in the fan base. What's the offseason leading into UTEP look for from Ed Foley and his crew when it comes to the special teams?
Yeah, that's tough because, a skill player is a skill player. And so, like, the challenge there, Ed's going to coach it up the best he can, and he'll prepare Tristan Alvano well. It becomes about what happens in the 3 seconds between lining up and then kicking the ball. I have seen kickers at Nebraska struggle from the right hash mark when they're right-footed because you can't just throw it out there. This just makes no sense. But, like, if you're on the left hash mark and you're a right-footed kicker, you can kind of throw it out there and kind of let it drift back in, like you can kind of like a gentle a gentle draw. Mm-hmm. When you're on the right hash and those hashes are wide, now it's harder to kick in the NFL than it is in college, but when those hashes are wide, you do have to pull the ball a little bit. And, you know, if you over pull it, then it looks pretty ugly. And so he's going to have to get better at being able to bring that, to draw the ball in, not throw it out there and let it draw back, but, you know, draw it in. And that sometimes can be a little bit challenging. And I think that's something he'll have to work through. I suspect he is a better long ball kicker. So like when he gets way back, it's easier when it's 53 yards to be able to gently draw that ball because you have more time. When you're at the 32, it's a 32 yard kick. You got to be able to move that thing and just kick it through. And I think that's the area where he's working. The punting thing, you know, Foley has told us, and I trust Foley because he's the expert, that he really likes what Buscini does when it's a pooch punt, when it's a down it inside the 20 punt. I think the work is continuing to be done on the deep punt. And the work that's being done on deep punt, and this is important, is directional. It is not kick the ball 60 yards long. Every punter in America can do that at this point. Like, Brian, if you told Brian Buscini, just kick it 60 yards right in the middle of the field, he could do that. The problem is when you do that, you're setting your return coverage unit up to give up a 30-yard return because the returners are really good. And so now it's about kick the ball 46 yards and pin them between the numbers and the sideline, and that's the skill, the elite skill for a punter, that's it. That's the skill that's not easy to perfect. And so I think Buscini's working at that.
Offensive line, Sam, I think a lot of eyes, especially with the guys that weren't in action, were a little bit more of the younger players. We've heard good things from whether Donovan Ryle or Matt Rhule or even Marcus Satterfield has spoke about the offensive line and guys like Atula. Even saw some Tyler Canuck, saw a lot of him in that. When you've seen what you've seen over the spring with that second wave of offensive linemen, and you can even throw in some of the freshmen like Grant Bricks, how close do you think that gap is between what you have as your mainline starters to guys that you could eventually rotate in?
Not far. I think the gap is relatively tight as it relates to the ability to play the position if you've played it a few games. So there's always going to be a gap between somebody who has never played a full game and someone who's played 32 on the offensive line. But what you're looking for is, okay, if Gunnar Katula had to play 8 games in a row, where would he be after those 8 games versus a player that had played 35 games? And I don't know that the gap would be that big. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. In this case, that's a good thing. I think they've got a lot of young guys in the program. There's a lot of depth. I think there's relatively good talent there. It's, you know, it's not Alabama, but it's pretty good. Like, it's top 6 or 7 talent in the Big Ten. You'll roll with that. Can they just continue to progress? I'm sure that Donovan Ryle doesn't say a lot, but I'm sure he would love the idea of being able to say, okay, this year we're going to have Ben Scott and Micah Mazuka and Bryce Benhart and Teddy Prochazka and maybe a healthy Turner Corcoran at right guard, and that is going to be the wave. And that wave plays, and then that wave graduates, and they pretty much would, other than Teddy. And then you got the next wave, and it's Justin Evans, and it's Lutowski's going to play anyway, but you know what I mean. There's a Sledge, mm-hmm. and there's a Gatula, and maybe Bricks is there. And like, I think ideally, if you go back and talk to the old-time Huskers from the 80s and the 90s, there was a wave of guys. They all kind of went through, then the next wave comes. And it's always about a 2 or 3 year wave, 2 years, 3 years. And, you know, there's an Outland Trophy winner, and then Aaron Taylor graduates, and here's Tony Ofonoti. And that's the thing that I think Railroad would love to set up, where you don't have to have a true freshman playing, where everyone on your front line is a third or fourth year guy, and the first or second year guys pretty much know, I'm going to be where they're at in 2 years, but I got to wait my turn because they're so damn good. That's the ideal structure, and I think they'll get there eventually.
Does Nebraska have an all-conference guy? Well, I just remembered you and I were talking about this. Yeah. Does Nebraska have more than one all-conference guy on offense when it's all said and done in late November?
Well, and one of the things that I said to you is, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I think so. I do. I you know, if we're extending out all conference to maybe second team, because at this point you have 18 teams. If you got 22 players, I feel pretty good about saying that 22 players should be on the first team. Like, and I don't know how they're going to do this in the Big Ten, but it does become a little ridiculous at some point when you have 18 teams and you have an 11 player mm-hmm. First team. That's you know, that's not even all NFC or all AFC at this point. So, you know, if you're going by Pro Bowl standards, so to speak, I think they probably are very close to having that. I think Jalen Lloyd's going to have a really nice year wherever they put him. And then I think one of those linemen can be in that spot. I think Ben Scott's one of the better centers in the league. I think Bryce Benhart's one of the better right tackles at this point. I think Teddy certainly can be. And, you know, everything else I think is coming along. Mm-hmm. I think that'd probably be where I would put it.
The first name, it was an interesting one too, Chief Borders, given a lot of the conversation about Chief Borders during spring ball, is the first to hit the transfer portal in this period. What was your reaction to that yesterday?
Well, you know, I think not shocked. Maybe the person, based on what we had heard, is a little surprising, but it's also possible that, you know, Rule understood, you know, Borders wanting to play somewhere, and you know, Chief's a good guy. So, you know, he says the right things in the media, and he's a good leader. Is he as explosive as some of the guys that Nebraska has at that spot? I don't know. You know, Nebraska's never going to not play as good of a guy as Chief Borders is. You know, if he's also the most explosive player, he's going to play a lot. And so I think, you know, Principal Mignellin is there. There's some other players who are at that position, and it could be that Chief just felt like he wasn't gonna play more than, you know, 20 snaps a game, and so you've got to try to find a spot. And he's graduated, he's graduating, I guess, next week. So yeah, I mean, I think this is, so I've been telling this to everybody. I don't think they're gonna lose a lot of guys right now. I think that's somewhat unlikely, right? But eventually. They're going, whether it's after the football season or next spring, there's going to be 9 or 10 guys that are like, yeah, we're too far down on the depth chart. I want to play as a college football player, and I see myself as a third teamer here, so I'm going to have to do something else. And when that day comes, people shouldn't be like shocked or think something is wrong. They have a huge roster of scholarship worthy players. Some of those guys will decide they want to play somewhere else.
Yeah, especially a defensive back. Wow. I mean, there are very few chairs that are available to sit in that defensive back room. Sam, as always, I appreciate the insight and the conversation. Have a great week, my friend.
Take care.
That's Sam McEwen of the Omaha World Herald. One in. Will there be more? Whoever signed up yesterday, like, I want to be the first on the list to meet with the coach.
Yeah.
They going.
Yep. Let's talk. Let's sit down and talk. Let's talk about your future. Not necessarily here, but... what can we do to help you? And this is, obviously, it's part of it. It's been very inactive for Nebraska here in the last year that Matt Rhule has been the head coach, which, as we've talked about, is obviously a good thing. But it is, you're right, in the secondary, and you see the amount of bodies that they like to use if you're an older guy. And I think the Chief Borders example is one that fits that, okay. If I'm looking for more than 15 snaps a game, is this the place that I'm going to be able to do that? Even if I am one of the better guys at the position rotating in and out as opposed to being able to kind of lock down a spot throughout the game. Yeah, there's a lot of things at work there.
A little bit later, Brian Christopherson and Andy Kendi on 1620 The Zone.